I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Henry the Eighth, I am, I am. I got married to the widow next door. She'd been married 7 times before, and every one of them was an Henry. She wouldn't have a Willie or a Sam. I'm an eightfold man, I'm Henry. I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Now, today I'd like to talk about something that relates to King Henry the Eighth, and that is the issue of not being able to have a son. As you may well know, Henry VIII, a lot of Henry VIII's struggles were over the fact that he wasn't able to produce a healthy son. He had Mary, a daughter, he had Elizabeth, a daughter, and then he had a son that died aged 9, Edward VI, and he had a son that died aged 17, his illegitimate son, Henry Fitzroy. But he wasn't able to have a son, and this was a matter of huge concern for him, and it caused a lot of trouble in England. And this brings into play a more significant issue, which is why is it that some people, try as they might, end up to have a daughter, end up having loads and loads of sons? And why is it that some people, try as they might to have a son, end up having loads and loads of daughters? We're of the belief that it's random whether you have a boy or a girl. It's 50-50. It's not random. There are clear factors which explain why some people have more sons and why some people have more daughters, why it's absolutely not random at all. And I want to go into one of those today. the big issue is, of course, life history strategy, which those of you who watch this channel will know about, but I'll talk about it in a minute. So the key thing is this. First of all, overall, worldwide, boys are more likely to be born than girls, slightly more likely. So that's the first thing. It's not true that it's 50-50. There is a slightly elevated chance that it's going to be a boy. Why is that? Well, two interrelated reasons relating to life history strategy. So life history strategy, remember, is that we all sit on a spectrum between a fast life history strategy and a slow life history strategy. A fast life history strategy is that we are evolved to live fast and die young. We are evolved to an unstable yet plentiful ecology. This means that we could be wiped out at any minute, so we invest most of our energy, most of our bioenergetic resources in copulation and have loads and loads of children, maybe, none of which we invest much in the hope that some of them will survive the unstable, unpredictable but easy conditions. As the carrying capacity for the species is reached, then you move towards a slow life history strategy. Now, when this happens, of course, if you have an environment that is increasingly harsh and stable, then you get towards the carrying capacity. It's harsh and stable, so it's predictable, but it's and it's competitive because you're close to the carrying capacity. Now, this means if it's harsh and stable, that if you have lots and lots and lots of children and you don't invest anything in them, if they're not adapted to the environment, they could all just die. And so in order for them to survive, in order to give them the edge that they need to survive in this highly competitive yet predictable now ecology, you have to invest energy in them. So you move energy away from copulation and towards nurture, towards investing your bioenergetic resources in the offspring. So this means that you have fewer sexual partners, you have less sexual intercourse, you have fewer offspring, and certain traits, personality traits, for example, like being cooperative or being which makes you a good nurturer, being altruistic following rules, which means that you can deal with a more predictable environment. These things tend to be selected for, and everything slows down, everything's smaller, you have smaller litters, you have you live longer, you have a longer childhood, so you can learn things in order to survive. Everything is slowed down. And in that environment, then your offspring are more likely to survive. So that's a slow life history strategy. And we all sit on a spectrum between one and the other. Now, males are faster life history strategists than females because a male has nothing to lose from the sexual encounter. A male, if he wants to, can copulate with as many people as he can possibly get away with. He has absolutely nothing to lose. And so it's his inclination to do that and to invest very little in them, to basically love them and leave them. The female is a slower life history strategist. She does have something to lose from the sexual encounter because she can get pregnant. And this will encumber her with a child. And also a male is essentially unlimited in how many children he can have, whereas a female is, of course, biologically limited in how many children she can have. So she is a slower life history strategist that needs to invest more in the offspring. She's literally forced by carrying it to invest more in the offspring. This means that men, what they want to do is sexually select for youth and beauty. Youth being, obviously, the person is fertile, and beauty because beauty is a sign of basically good genes, that you have a symmetrical face and you have good genes, that you've inherited good genes. Women, they will select for those things, of course, as well, but they will also select for the status of the male, because if they select for status, then a high status male will be more able to invest in them and their offspring, and so them and their offspring will be more likely to survive, and then also select for certain traits like being nurturing and not wanting to love them and leave them, pump and dump, things like that. And so, and in general, it's much more important who her partner is. So the female is more picky because she is a slower life history strategist. The male, because he's a fast life history strategist, he takes risks. And so he's more likely to die young, more likely to get killed in fights, whatever. And so therefore, it makes sense that in all cultures everywhere, a child is more likely to be a boy because children are more boys are more likely to die in accidents. They're more likely to get killed. They even being fast life history strategists, they have worse genetic health than women, and so are more likely to die as children of diseases and things like that, as happened to many sons of Henry VIII, but not so much to his daughters. So that's basically it. So what you have is a fast life history strategist, and a slow life history strategist, and they have differences in how they operate. But this also relates to how likely you are to have a son or a daughter. Now, this is very interesting. So, we are evolved to polygamous conditions. It's very recent in history that monogamy has developed. So, we are evolved to polygamous conditions. What this means is that because the females are sexually attracted to high-status males, the high-status males will be able to have lots and lots of wives. They will practice polygamy. They will have lots and lots and lots of wives. And the low-status males won't have any wives at all because the wives aren't interested in low-status males. And so what's been found, for example, among the Bushmen of the Kalahari is that 60% of Bushmen males do not pass on their genes at all. They don't have any children, because the females are dominated by the marriage pool by these high status males that have lots and lots of wives that all the women want to have children with. And so this means that we have double the number of female ancestors that we do male ancestors, because our male ancestors are all these alpha males who with lots and lots and lots of wives. Whereas we've got multiple female ancestors, who with small number of husbands, and so women make a disproportionately large contribution to the gene pool because it's the best men that get all the birds, basically. And so what this in turn means is that in this kind of environment, if you have a daughter, then the daughter will require less investment. The daughters are all going to have children. The daughters, unless they're really, really ugly or something, or just really, really ghastly. Remember, men's standards are lower than women's standards. And so all the daughters, they've got no problem. They're going to have children. You will almost certainly pass on your genes if you have a daughter. If you have a son, it's touch and go in this kind of ecology whether you will pass on your genes. Realistically, if you have a son, you're only going to pass on your genes if that son is able to become a high-status male. He is only really going to be able to become a high-status male if he has certain genetic qualities that allow him to be a high-status male, and B, if you invest a great deal of your resources in him, and so on, so that hopefully, due to that high level of investment and nurture, he's trained for the ecology, and he can become a high status male. So, to have a son and pass on your genes via a son requires investment, requires nurture, requires K strategy. To have a daughter, you can just have her and just let her go, and someone will breed by her, and you'll pass on your genes. What this means, what you would expect this to mean, is that having lots of daughters would correlate with being a fast life history strategist. So the kind of men who would be these Henry VIII types, who would be these fast life history strategists who have lots of affairs and who are these, you know, dominant, violent men. Henry VIII was this tyrant. He was clearly what we might call a highly intelligent, fast life history strategist. He had numerous mistresses. He was violent. He was aggressive. He was domineering. He was uncooperative. He had all of the traits of a fast life history strategist. Someone like that would end up having lots, for genetic reasons, having lots and lots of daughters, and wouldn't have much in the way of sons, because if you're a fast life history strategist, it makes sense to have daughters, because the daughters are more likely to survive, because they don't need to have much investment. So that is the reason why we would expect people who were fast life history strategists, which tends to, by the way, correlate with being lower class, to have lots and lots of daughters, because they don't need to invest in them. Now, consistent with this, there is evidence that the older your parents are, and particularly the older your father is, the more likely you are to have girls. Now, why is this the case? Well, obviously, this is a matter of life history strategy. If you are an old person and you have children, then you might die soon. You could die before that child grows up. And so if you have a son, then in evolutionary terms, that could be a problem, because you won't be able to invest in that son. You won't be able to ensure that as much as you can, that that son reaches high social status, meaning that under our polygamous mindset to which we are evolved, he will be able to reach the top of the hierarchy and thus breed. If you have a daughter, then of course the daughter, you can pretty much guarantee it, as I say, unless she's absolutely ghastly, that somebody's going to impregnate her. And so it would make much more sense for old people who might potentially die before they could finish their investment, at least in prehistory, to have daughters. And this is indeed the case. People who are older that have children are more likely to have daughters. So one of the ways, if you would like to have a daughter, that you can end up having a daughter is by having children at a relatively old age, because they require, if they're girls, of course, they require less investment, and you may be able to give them less investment when you're old. The second thing that's been found is that people that are good looking have more daughters. Now, why is this the case? Well, what is it to be good looking? To be good looking, people say, oh, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And if you've watched this channel long enough and you look at my video, How to Judge People by What They Look Like, then you'll know that's absolute nonsense. Beauty is not in the eye of the beholder. Beauty is symmetrical. One of the things it relates to is clearly age, but controlling for age. People are good looking if they have a symmetrical phenotype. What is a why is that? Why is symmetry associated with beauty? Well, if you have a symmetrical phenotype, then it means that you have been able to maintain a symmetrical phenotype in the face of disease. So you've got enough bioenergetic resources left over to fight off the disease now and still maintain a symmetrical phenotype. If you have bad genes, if you have high mutational load, then you will have to invest more of your bioenergetic resources proportionately in fighting off the disease, the result of which will be that you will be less able to maintain a symmetrical phenotype. So being good looking is an honesty signal of genetic quality. One. Two, it means that you simply don't have many mutant genes that relate to the face, and that will mean that more broadly you're going to have a good, a low level mutational load, and you're going to have good genetic health, and therefore you're going to be more of a prospect of, and your children will be more of a prospect of surviving the ecology and passing on their genes. So there are other elements to being good looking as well, but that's basically the fundamental factors involved. And so, and also, if you're good looking when you're young, this is another thing. So you get some people that age aren't particularly good looking, let's say when they're 20, but they age slowly. So by the time that you get this with lots of women, I notice it now that I'm 40 years old, that you get women who were really, really fit when they were 20, but they've aged quickly and now they're ragged and ugly. An example would be, you know, the kind of these kinds of starlets that are, you know, really popular in their 20s. They age quickly and then they're ragged. The ugly duckling syndrome is the opposite of this. I had to say girls that aren't that good looking when they're young necessarily, but they age slowly. And so when they're 40, relative to other women who are 40, they're actually rather good looking.
they're MILFs. And so you do get this process of people that if you're a fast life history strategist and you want to pass on your genes quickly, then the best thing to do is to be good looking at a young age. And then after that, well, you'll age quickly and you'll become old and ugly and it doesn't matter. Whereas if you're a slow life history strategist, then it doesn't matter if you're good looking when you're very, very young, because you're slow. And the people that are wanting to pass on their genes with you will be less concerned with looks anyway. They'll be more concerned with your personality and whatever, because they'll be prepared to invest in the offspring. And if they're prepared to invest in the offspring, they won't want to be cuckolded. And if they don't want to be cuckolded, then they'll want to know that, you know, they'll want markers that you won't cuckold them, such as that you're religious or something like that. And so looks will be less important. And anyway, you will simply age more slowly and thus be better looking when you're older. Now, what's been found is that these stereotypical good-looking people, i.e. people that are good-looking when they're young, tend to have more girls. Good-looking people have more girls. Now, why would that be the case? Well, there's two related reasons to it. First of all, if you the thing which in prehistory gets girls selected for is the fact that they are good looking. That's what high status males will go for. High status males will go for good looking girls, because being good looking is a sign of genetic quality. Youth and beauty is what they go for. So if that's what you've got, if you've got the ability to be good looking, which is what it helps the girl to a greater extent than the boy, then it would make sense to have more girls because of course that would mean you'd be more likely to pass on your genes. So it is that, for that reason, firstly, that people who are good looking have more girls. The second reason that people that are good looking have more girls is that if they are good looking when they are young in particular, then that is potentially likely to be a matter of a fast life history strategy. What they look like when they're older doesn't matter. When they're young, fast life history strategy. And of course, people who are fast life history strategists will tend to have more girls. Now, the next thing you can look at this at is in terms of different ethnic groups, different populations. Now, what has been demonstrated is that there are population differences in how fast or slow people are on average. So, for example, people who live in warmer parts of the world, which are also less stable, those people operate, it's been demonstrated in depth in my new book, Making Sense of Race, a faster life history strategy on every, because it's an unstable ecology, and therefore they are evolved, and it's an easy ecology, so they are evolved to live fast and die young. And so this means they are born after less gestation, there is more twinning, they reach puberty more quickly, they grow up more quickly, they reach menopause more quickly, they die younger, even controlling for socioeconomic factors, and on every other level they are fast life history strategists. If you move to environments which are cold and stable, then of course the people that live there, this is East Asians and whatever, it's the opposite. They grow up more slowly, puberty is later, menopause is later, twinning is lower, and on every level they are slower life history strategists. Now, what you find in these warmer and unstable parts of the world is that there are more girls born, i.e. the sex ratio, although it is skewed towards boys at birth, is only weakly skewed towards boys. It's like 1.03 boys for every one girl. Whereas once you go to somewhere like China, it's 1 to 1.1. And so this is showing you that more girls tend to be born in these fast life history strategy areas than in the slower life history strategy areas, which makes complete sense. And so again, we have another indicator that having lots of girls is a marker of a fast life history strategy. Now, you may wonder two interesting things. One is, well, why is it then that you get these people that are obsessed with having sons? Why is it that in third world countries and whatever, people want to have sons? Why did Henry VIII want to have sons? Well, this could be a matter of the fact that he is of high social status. If you are of high social status, then things start to change. If you are like Henry VIII of high social status, well, first of all, on a practical level, he needed a king to head his kingdom because it's a warlike situation children. You need a man to head people, head the group in times of war. And so that's the first thing. But the second thing is that if you are of high social status, if you're rich and wealthy and you can invest in your children and you've got lots of resources, it makes sense in evolutionary terms to have lots of sons, because they're all going to be rich and they're unlimited in the number of offspring they can have. They can have all the girls they want, and they're going to have loads and loads and loads and loads of offspring, as indeed these emperors like Ishmael the Magnificent and all these kinds of people, all these people you see in the Bible, as indeed they did. They can have numerous offspring, whereas if you're of high status and you have a girl, then she's limited in the amount of offspring you can have. So if you're of high socioeconomic status, it is better to have a boy. And so that is perhaps one of the reasons why they will have boy. If they will want to have boys because there's no problem there. They can have loads and loads of boys and they can pass on their genes much more easily. And if you are of low socioeconomic status and you have a boy, then of course you've got to invest in him, or it's just be a waste of time and he'll end up having no children whatsoever. And so it becomes rather dangerous to have a boy. The other thing is, why is it that people seem to have more boys in the wake of wars? You might argue that a war is a fast life history strategy situation, and so this would mean that you would expect people to be more inclined to have girls because it's a fast life history strategy situation. The counter argument would be that perhaps we are specifically able to, it would make evolutionary sense for us to perceive that there has been a war, and for us to have a mechanism whereby, because there has been a war and because there has been a decimation of the number of males, it would make sense, it would be adaptive to have more sons in those circumstances. So I'm not sure that is necessarily a contradiction. Now, I was commissioned by our great squire, who some of you may be familiar with, the drinker at the Jolly Heretic, to do this video, and there are some interesting questions that it raises. I don't propose that this is, clear cut. And I would be interested in your views on it. The first thing that I'm grappling with is, why is it in countries like India and whatever, everybody, even poor people, seem to want to have sons? Now, even though you would expect that the poor people would be fast life history strategists and it would make evolutionary sense for them to have daughters. Now, I'm told the answer to this is that the daughters are expensive and they have to pay them off with dowries and things like that in order to pass on their genes. So basically, you have something, this is interesting, which stands in the way of a fast life history strategy. Now, could this be where dowries have come from? Could this be adaptive? Could this be a way of making the society more slow life history strategy? And as we have discussed before, the group under Darwinian conditions that is more likely to survive and pass on its genes is high in positive ethnocentrism and high in negative ethnocentrism. In other words, it is internally highly cooperative and externally highly aggressive. It is to a great extent a slow life history strategy group that is more likely, within certain variations, to pass on its genes. And so if you have a rule where poor people that have daughters, and the poor are more likely to have daughters because they're more likely to be fast life history strategists, because being a fast life history strategist means you're low in IQ, you're low in conscientiousness, you're low in agreeableness, you're low in these things that are associated with socioeconomic status, and these things are highly heritable, then you're stopping them from passing on their genes. You're actually standing in the way of them passing on their genes because they have to pay to have these daughters. And indeed, they deliberately have abortions and practice infanticide to avoid having daughters because of the dowry problem. And they have a son because there's maybe a small number of sons, so that the son can look after them and inherit the work or whatever it is. So actually, but they're less likely to have sons. They're more likely to have daughters. So I wonder if the dowry could be a strategy, an evolutionary strategy, to make the group more slow life history strategist and more, therefore, ethnocentric, more group selected, if that's perhaps where it's come from. But that's an interesting contradiction, and which I would be interested in your views on. Another thing that I wasn't quite sure about that it was that seemed a bit of a contradiction was, of course, if you have more sons, then the sons are you're more likely to have a dominant clan. More men means more power. And wouldn't it be the case that under an unstable ecology, if you have lots and lots of men, that it would be useful because you'd be able to fight and win. So wouldn't it, against other unstable groups, so wouldn't more men work in that way as well? And the final thing I was wondering about is, presumably, if you have more females, this will reduce intermale conflict, because if you have an excess of females, because it means that the all of the men can get females, and therefore there'll be less intermale conflict, which will mean that there'll be more ethnocentrism, more cooperation, and the group is more likely to survive. So wouldn't it be adaptive to have more females? And in that sense, shouldn't more females be an excess of females be a K-strategy thing? Now, the counter argument is that only if you have monogamy, that sort of forces you into monogamy. If everybody can get it, that only happens if you have monogamy. It only works if you have monogamy. And for much of our history, we haven't had monogamy. It hasn't been instituted for some reason, and so therefore that doesn't work. But anyway, I'd be interested in your views on this. But the key point is that it is not random whether you have a boy or a girl, or how many boys or girls you have. There are clear evolutionary factors behind it, and these relate to life history strategy. Well, I hope this is a bit of interest, and if it has, please, please, please subscribe. It really helps if you do that. Please, please, please help support the channel, which you can do in the various ways set out in the box below. Remember, I live stream on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. In New York, and I will see you soon, and goodbye!